Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hashtag no music, no intro, another late night episode of the Saints Block Party Podcast. We are honored to have our esteemed guest join us from Field Vision Sports, Scott Buschka, former VP at Nike, now with Field Vision. If you listen to our podcast before, we've had the stellar, loquacious, just an insane football mind of Cody Alexander on, who's also part of Field Vision. So we wanted to get Scott on here and just talk to us about Field Vision, and I'll kind of talk about how I came across Scott that led to us even having this conversation. But thank you so much for just hopping on last minute, joining us and talking Field Vision, man, and talking sports data.
Hey, fellas, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate it. It's going to be fun. I just have to tell you and the listeners, if you had Cody on, I don't know near as much about football as Cody.
Not many people do.
I saw on Cody's Instagram that he was at a concert, and I was like, that's the first time I've seen you in a picture without a football.
What concert was it?
It was Third Eye Blind, which should not be surprising if you know Cody. Yeah. So, but I'll do my best. I'll do my best.
It makes sense. Yeah. Cody is awesome, man. Like we had him on like what 2 months ago, and I was just like, I kind of knew what to expect, but like hearing him in person, it was just like, golly.
Yeah.
Bro, why aren't you on the NFL team right now?
You speak. You know, like when you talk to a lawyer or a doctor, and they speak in like, it's like Cody only speaks football. And he's like, even if you know a lot about football, half the things he says like don't make complete sense because he's just like
talking. Me realize how little I actually know about football, and I pride myself on knowing quite a bit about football.
Yeah. Well, so just so you guys know, we were in the early days of Field Vision. We were like, I was looking for a quote unquote football expert. I'm like, I need a dude who knows a ton about football, and I found Cody. I talked to him for like 5 minutes, and I was like, "Yeah, this is the dude.
This is the guy.
So, for our listeners, so just to give our listeners who are listening or watching this, you can follow Field Vision on Twitter. It's at Field Vision MI. You guys are also on Instagram, right, Scott?
Yeah, at Field Vision Sports on Instagram.
So just break it down to people who are watching or listening. What is Field Vision? And I got some graphs that you posted from the Twitter account X. Sorry, I'm always going to call it Twitter. I don't apologize, actually. but what exactly is the mission and the vision of Field Vision? No pun intended.
Yeah, so we call ourselves a predictive analytics company. Mm-hmm. What we would say is we're the first predictive analytics football platform built specifically for fans. And I would say our mission is to put the information that teams, coaches, GMs, and sports books have, like put that information into the hands of fans. A lot of the stuff you'll see us post on Twitter, kind of the scatter charts, the advanced analytics, right, are actually a little bit more geared towards like heavy analytics. We'll be launching a product in September, which is a mobile app, which will be much more consumer friendly, quite frankly. Like people sitting on their couch on Sunday looking to watch the Saints play and wanting to know, like, is Rashid Shaheed going to go over or under his 50-yard receiving prop? Ooh.
Nice. Now, that's something I think we've all been wanting for a long time. Like, I know there's plenty of products out there. There's, you know, PFF, yeah, Football Outsiders for a while. You know, there's plenty of others. But something that's really digestible to fans and someone that doesn't assume fans are dumb. Because, I mean, football fans are pretty smart these days, man. Like, they want data. Like, there's so much data out there. We just want it. We crave for it. And I have a background in data. I was a database administrator. I work in business analytics and stuff like that. And I try to go out and find NFL data to compile together and put together. But it's everywhere. It's like, yeah. Where do you even start to get all this data? So how do you guys go about getting all this NFL data? Do you deal with different APIs and bring in the data, or do you guys have guys that sit down and crunch the tape and, you know, chart players? How do you guys do it?
Yeah, we have, it's a good question. We have access to a couple different APIs, but my co-founder actually is a data scientist. So we have a couple data scientists on staff. And what we did is we bought a bunch of play-by-play data going back several years. And we've been trying to model that data to tell us when we see certain defensive variables present themselves, what does that tell us about what's going to happen on offense? So we're, Adam, you mentioned our Twitter handle. I still call it Twitter too, by the way, is at
good man
at Field Vision MI. The MI actually stands for matchup index. So we're high centered on this idea of the Field Vision Matchup Index. And what we would say is we understand matchups better than anyone else in football. And so when we get into week one, like if you take Chiefs, Ravens, which by the way, I'm from Kansas City, so I'm a Chiefs fan, but I was cheering for them for a lot of years before they were ever good. I just need to say that.
Just got to throw it out there. Just got to put it out there.
So when we get into Chiefs, Ravens, September 5th, week one, like we'll have a point of view on the Chiefs playmakers versus the Ravens defense and which of them is going to match up best based on what we know the Ravens are going to do on defense. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine on a week-to-week basis, Field Vision is going to be coming with, of the 250 playmakers in the NFL, here's the 10 we're telling you have a matchup that you can bank on. And it might go the opposite way as well, right? We might say like the Saints are playing the Bucs this week, and their defense matches up really well against, you know, what the Buccaneers are trying to do on offense.
Interesting. And so to that point, going back to that example with the Chiefs Ravens week one matchup, how does Field Vision, the matchup index, account for, and I don't know if this is more of a Cody piece, with the Ravens defensive coordinator now being the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks and them having a new defensive coordinator of the schemes and things like that. Like, I'm just curious of how that works.
Yeah. How nerdy do you want me to go here?
Nerd us. Nerd out, man. Not, it's you after hours.
We haven't met our listeners. We got some nerds. Serious nerds.
Defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators, and coaching trees are definitely a thing, right? And so we think about coordinators through the lens of clustering, right? So you've got like a Shanahan, McVay, Kevin O'Connell, Mike McDaniel coaching tree, right? Who run offenses with similar, like this, there, it's a cluster of similar offensive principles. And we would say defense is the same way. So like the Ravens, Mike McDonald leaves. They've got a guy who's coming up through his coaching tree. We kind of have to assume, to be honest with you, that what they're going to do on defense is going to look pretty similar. But quite frankly, like, we're going to know a hell of a lot better after we get through week one, week two of the season.
Right. And you adjust as you go on.
Yeah. Yeah. And you always want to weight more heavily towards the things that happened recently. One thing I can tell you is when there is a defensive coordinator, their defensive tendencies are pretty, they're pretty predictable. Like you know what they're going to do.
They are who they are.
Yeah, totally.
That's so fascinating that you guys are focusing on matchups, because I think that's like, I think you kind of found a niche there, because that seems like that's been one of the missing components you see with a lot of sites that bring NFL data, because they throw all this data at you. Hey, you know, Rashid Shaheed does this. He does this versus zone versus man, or, you know, Chris Olave does this versus zone or man, blah, 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 this quarterback. But the specific matchup against who they're facing this week, their strengths versus your strengths or your weaknesses and vice versa, that's a niche that I just hadn't seen out there, man. I think you're onto something.
Even going back to the Ravens Chiefs example, right, in the playoffs, the matchup that the Chiefs bet on was Travis Kelce versus Kyle Hamilton. Like, that was the matchup, right, in that game. And the Chiefs and Andy Reid were betting that Travis Kelce would get the best of Kyle Hamilton, who was an all-pro, mind you. Like, that was just good on good. It's fascinating. Fascinating.
Yep. What actually in that, and I think we posted some stuff super early on, which we'll probably come back to it, but what was interesting to me about that game is actually the other side of the ball. And if you, what Spags did to the Ravens is he played a bunch of man and he blitzed. And it's like, playing man usually a death sentence against Lamar Jackson, unless you can blitz him and get home. And so he actually, like, if you dig into it, you're like, on a surface level, you're like, the Chiefs are going to play man against the Ravens, they're going to get smoked. But like, they played man, and every time they played man, they blitzed and they got home, which was a little bit, at least last year, of Jackson's kryptonite.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, I believe Spags ran quite a bit of cover zero against the Ravens. He was just bringing it in. I mean, Lamar, I remember him after the game saying, like, we weren't prepared for Spags blitz. And I was like, what? Like, how can you not be prepared? But that just goes to how well, goes how well, you know, Spags schemed it up, man. Like, that was quite a performance. I remember that.
Yeah. It's bad that I know this, but I think he blitzed on like 46% of snaps in that game.
Yeah.
Damn. Even going back to, right, we're talking about matchups, right? Lamar's first playoff game in the NFL was against the Chargers. And the Chargers did the exact same thing with Derwin James in terms of had him close to the line of scrimmage, had him blitzing. I remember that game just very vividly. And kind of fast forward to Lamar years later, and defenses, because we're kind of going with that same premise, defenses that still operate and play that way are still giving him fits, assuming that the defense works, right? Like, you have, like, it can't just be a defense that's just blitz 46% of the time and just assume that it's going to work, because it does not work like that. But just it's fascinating. Very, very exciting stuff.
Yeah. Well, one dude, which I was in prepping for this thinking about, like, by the way, I'm a huge Willie Gay fan.
Oh,
but like, if you're going to employ a strategy like that, you got to have linebackers like Willie Gay who can shadow a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. And actually Chiefs had two of them, Willie Gay and Drew Tranquil. But that's a big part of, like, because if Lamar gets loose and you're playing cover zero and everyone's backs turned to him, you're smoked. But like the Chief, which Willie Gay is one of them, like having a linebacker who can run with quarterbacks like that's a huge asset.
That's really fascinating. Yeah,
go ahead. I know you already know the point you're about to make.
We're about to say the same thing. I mean, we like this. That's been like the Achilles heel, because Dennis Allen, you know, through, I say, since 2017-18, has had a pretty consistent defense for the most part. But the one Achilles heel has been against mobile quarterbacks. And look, mobile quarterbacks hurt everybody, but it just stood out for him because, like, man, he would shut down Tom Brady, you know, have Tom Brady looking like a, you know, a bottom tier quarterback. And then the next week you have Jalen Hurts just running all over the place. So it's like, what is going on? Yeah. So I think, you know, them getting Willie Gay this offseason, I think that was really a position they targeted, not only to compete with Pete Werner, but to fill that void as someone who could shadow mobile quarterbacks that could move, somebody that could blitz, somebody that could, cover. You know, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, they didn't pay him a bunch of money, but I think from what we've heard, he's penciled in as far as, if not a starter, a huge contributor.
Getting back to, I wanted to kind of go how I kind of found Scott. Sorry, I was finding the tweet, and just getting it out there on Twitter that we are live. But the tweet that just magically was just on my on my timeline when, in terms of like finding Scott, was your comments that you said regarding Aaron Rodgers, right? Just in regards to leadership, right? So this is June 12th. And I said, and you said, where Aaron Rodgers is, what he's doing, whether it was excused, doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It's called leadership. People follow the examples of leaders, and whether Rodgers admits it or not, he's setting the standard. He's not setting the standard for his team, or he is setting the standard for his team. Excuse me. Rodgers forgot how to lead a long time ago.
Mm.
Just chef's kiss.
Straight up.
I mean, we're talking, we talked about this before we start recording. You were a VP at Nike for a number of years, right? Leadership. I'm currently in a manager role in my job, in my career, you know, being a social worker. Leadership is something that when you are a leader, you have to set the tone. Like, you set the tone, you set the stage, everything. And so that was just so crystallized regarding just how the whole Jets operation has been lately. I guess the question to you is that a reflection on Robert Sala too, to some degree, a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I first of all, I explicitly remember when you responded to that and went that tweet, and I really appreciate it, because it wasn't actually like, look, I'm working in football now, but that wasn't, that was less of a comment for me having anything to do with football. It was more like a lot of years of managing pretty big teams at Nike, and quite frankly, like having three little kids. And it's like you lead by example. And if you're not willing to put in the work, it's like, you know, I'm the founder of this company, Field Vision, and I'm, you know, you guys are like, you want to get on at 9 p.m. at night? I'm like, yeah, I'll get on at 9 p.m. at night, because I'm, you know, I'm working every night. If I expect our team to be doing that, I should be willing to do it too. What's weird is that I think somewhere along the way, Rodgers forgot that, and it's almost like he became so full of himself, his ego got so big that he's like, I don't have to do that anymore. I think it's like mostly an indictment on Jets culture and of course the leadership of Sala, because he is not treated as or never thought about himself as the leader of that team. It's Rodgers, right?
Right.
And when Rodgers does whatever he wants to, you know, it's, I think their season's doomed before it starts.
So tell me more about your background, you know, coming from Nike. What was your background there, and how did you, you know, what made you want to get into this?
I spent 12 years at Nike, mostly started in corporate strategy, kind of like strategy, went into innovation, went into footwear. And then my most recent job was I led most of what we call our business operations. Man, I started my career a long time ago in finance, doing the Wall Street thing, and I absolutely hated it. And I ended up quitting that job, and I spent a couple years as an NFL agent working for a guy named Craig Doman, who's actually an agent based out of Colorado Springs. And so I have always been trying to like angle my career into sports, and quite frankly, it's like, I love sports. I'm passionate about sports. I'm probably most passionate about like the difference sports made in my life and the difference it makes in, like, you know, kids' lives as they're growing up playing it. So I've always wanted to build my career in and around sports and specifically in and around football. This just happened to be the right time where it's like 12 years at Nike. Like, you work at a company that big. I was getting like farther and farther away from the reason I actually came to the company in the first place, which is like, yo, this is a cool company that's about sport and like, just do it. And quite frankly, like by the end of it, we're just selling shoes, like selling as many shoes as we can, you know? So look, here I am, you know, kind of building a company with a group of dudes that I like, and I think we're doing something cool. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Well, we just the data that's kind of been posted on Twitter so far is just very informative. It's very eye catching. I think visual statistics and like visual models for people who are visual people is so prevalent and so necessary in like 2024. So just it being just as eye popping as it is, and just it just kind of helps, even no matter where your level of football understanding is, high level, low level, it just makes it kind of easier for everyone to kind of see the picture that the data is saying.
Yeah. I think Wolf, you said it earlier, but I think there's a real nuance to simplifying data down out of like football nerddom, PFF, like metrics that you don't understand, but also not taking for granted how smart fans actually are. And so like we're trying to hit that balance. Like I said, the mobile app that we launched in September, it'll look a little different than what we've been posting on Twitter, but we'll send you guys some screenshots, like as we like start to develop the product. But yeah, we're hoping it hits that kind of delicate, like visual balance.
Absolutely, man. I'm definitely can't wait to see. And, I wanted to ask you if you can explain EPA to the listeners.
Right on top of it, you know, for you.
Yeah, a lot of us know what it is, but
Sure.
Like for me, like it's so hard for me to explain it. Though I was trying to explain it to my coworker today, and I was like, "Damn, I'll just send you a link, man. I don't."
Okay, we might need Cody for this. I'll try something out on you guys. I'll see if you agree with me, because I've been having this debate with people on our team for a while. So EPA, expected points added, is in theory it attributes a value to every single play in a game, right? That's trying to equate a certain amount of points to it. So like when we post all of those, when we post those like field area graphs, like deep passes are worth a ton of EPA, right? Because you're taking 50 yards and a chunk down the field, and like you may even get a touchdown. So it's very heavily weighted towards explosive plays and chunk yardage. The way that it's easiest for me to think about is actually if you get, because a lot of times you see either like EPA per play or like total EPA for a whole season. I like to look at it as EPA per game. And if you look at it as EPA per game, like, so CeeDee Lamb, in 2023 led the league for receivers in terms of like total EPA. He generated 107 expected points added throughout the course of a season. If you divide 107 by 16, let me just make sure I got my math right. or by 17, that equals 6.3 expected points added per game. And so what you're basically saying is like, last year for the Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb was worth 6.3 points a game. Like if you were to take him out and put an average receiver in, he's giving you 6.3 points per game. So it's a metric that's trying to say like, this is how much someone contributed to the total points a team generated in a given game. I think it's most consumer friendly when you look at it on a per game basis. I don't know if that helped at all.
It does. Think, you know, it's just looking at the number. I remember when I first started looking at it, it wasn't intuitive. When you first look at it, like, okay, 0.83, like it's plays a 0.83. What does that mean in the grand scheme? But like you said, like once you look at it, like per game, and especially if you apply it to, you know, what this specific player brings per game as far as EPA, it definitely makes more sense.
It does. It does. I'm actually trying to share like the screen so it can actually like come up, and let's see if it works. Yes, no, maybe so.
It's coming. Yep.
All right. Okay. I might need to like. I can't really make it bigger. Sorry.
Can you click on the picture?
Oh, duh. I'm smart. All right. So, this is the field area profile for Derek Carr last season, his first season with the Saints. We're just talking about EPA. So I'm guessing this EPA 29.5 in his total EPA. This is only just passing yards, is 128.1. So just for people who are going to be utilizing Field Vision in the future on the app, in September, give us like a very, maybe like layman terms breakdown of what this says about Derek Carr's season last year.
Well, in general, what this says is that Derek Carr was a very average quarterback. in super layman's terms, he's generally in all of this stuff falling between 11th and 15th. But what it also tells you is that in Derek Carr has been doing this since he played for the Raiders, is he's basically either going to check down or chuck it downfield. Right. I was actually surprised when we put this together, because you see the deep left part of the field, but also deep mm-hmm. center. Like he's generating a ton of extra value. What this also includes, which Derek Carr is notorious for, and if you're a fan playing against him, it pisses you off every time, is like he'll chuck it downfield and get a pass interference penalty, which is accounted for in these numbers. And so you see, like, he's really good deep left, deep middle. And then we didn't highlight it, but if you look actually the short left side of the field, he was third in the league in that 0 to 10 yards. Which is essentially him checking down, right?
Right.
Like checking down to a tight end or a running back. So like that, this profile checks out for Derek Carr. If you look at that shaded box in the upper left hand corner, he lost 100 points of EPA.
Ooh,
either right like there. when he was under pressure, sacked, right, or like didn't throw a pass, which is so. It feels like a lot. It was the 13th most in the league. So this it's actually not out of the ordinary. We did this profile for Geno Smith, and it actually showed something very similar. But if you go look at a Josh Allen, a Patrick Mahomes, a Lamar Jackson, that the difference between total EPA and the EPA that they lost to sacks is going to be way lower. Right. Cause basically like they do a really good job of avoiding negative plays. Because those are drive killers. Right.
Right.
And so that is what I would say, like that right there is actually what makes Derek Carr a pretty average quarterback, is like he doesn't have a huge ability to like create out of structure and or avoid the negative play.
Right. And also, it seems like, I mean, just my experience in watching him last season, and obviously they brought in Clint Kubiak, kind of going back to the whole coaching tree thing and what have you, is they hope that Clint Kubiak, in essence, as an offensive coordinator, can help him, like, just make the offense just very easy, just read, throw. Because what I noticed last season is that when he's, like, had this – this is going to sound like insane, but like when he had to read a defense, like it was night nights. Like it was like, which led to a lot of sacks, because like the processing that needed to be there wasn't there. So like that 100% aligns with that.
Yeah. I was looking this up before we got on to, and the Saints, I think, were 22nd in the league last year, EPA generated in the running game. And so, like, if you're, and they are traditionally a much better running team, right? And so, like, if you're gonna have Derek Carr as your quarterback, you got to be able to run the ball, right? Because you don't want Derek Carr in third and tens, Like you want him in third and threes. And so I like Kubiak coming from like underneath his dad, right? Of like the Terrell Davis Broncos of the mid 90s. Like hopefully he can figure that out.
Yeah. I think what they intend to do is a lot of play action from under center, outside zone, offensive linemen moving laterally, some boot action and stuff like that. Get Derek Carr to move a little bit, and just high low reads. Try to keep it simple. And one thing I was fascinated by that what you had up early was the middle of the field, and this drove us crazy last year just watching the Saints.
I'll go back to it. Yeah.
We were why aren't we targeting the middle of the field? And it was hard for me to figure out if it wasn't the offense because Pete Carmichael was a week-to-week play caller. You didn't know what to expect. Or was it Derek Carr? Could he not read? Could he not see the middle of the field? Stuff like that. But it was just good to see this, and be like, okay, it wasn't just my eyes. Like, you could see this within the data that he was horrible in the middle of the field.
Yeah. I generally, that intermediate zone of the field, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, it's between 10 and 20 yards. Like, I think about those are like the stick movers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because those are, it's like third and seven, third and eight, third and nine, when you got to throw it past the sticks and you're getting 12, 15 yard passes. Because if you look at the success rates deep are low. Like they just are, right? You're taking shots.
Right. Sense.
So, like Derek Carr actually like 48% success rate, 46, 33 is pretty good. But like in theory, you want that intermediate part of the field to be like high success rate and generating pretty decent EPA, which he tends to struggle there.
Yeah. Quite a bit. Getting back to staying with the Saints offense, you had put this out too before we started to record today, is just the receiver profile. So we have the average success rate, and then the expected play average per play when targeted. So you said, look at the Saints playmakers in 2023. They didn't add a ton in the wide receiver room in the offseason. Is anyone going to take a leap in 2024? So no Michael Thomas, no Lynn Bowden. It seems like they're really banking on Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, maybe some Cedric Wilson, and maybe some growth from A.T. Perry. And more than likely, I would say A.K. being used more in the passing game than he has been the last couple of years to kind of hopefully help Derek Carr in those areas.
Yeah. I mean, I would be curious. You guys know better than me. I would have liked to see the Saints add another playmaker in the offseason. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Shaheed's not like, I actually really like Shaheed. He's a really good number three threat deep. Like, I just don't know who their number two is. I'd be curious your point of view on that.
No, it's like the big question going into this offseason. We were screaming for, who's the
Brock,
tight end?
Brock Bowers.
Brock Bowers. We were screaming for him in the draft, but we knew it was,
one pick away, Ryan. One pick away.
One pick away, but we knew offensive line was like a huge, was a huge target for them. But yeah, it's a big hole. When Michael Thomas is gone, the hope is kind of like an A.T. Perry, but he only had 12 catches last year. A lot of talent, a lot of potential there, but, it's still just potential. They drafted Bub Means like in the fifth round. Again, potential, but we don't know. So yeah, it's just a huge question mark as far as, what are they going to do there? There's some expectations for the tight ends to step up a little bit, but Juwan Johnson, he's hurt his foot. We don't know how long he's going to be out. We didn't even know how much he was going to be contributing. So it's just a lot of questions there. The hope I know is for Alvin Kamara to get involved more in the pass game. I see him there. He had a 4.5 yard average depth of target? Like, you can look at that, but just if you look at the eye test, like if you actually look at the tape of Alvin Kamara, is like, there's still a lot there. Like all Saints fans, most people will tell you, is like, come on, man, it was definitely a way he was used that was definitely a problem. And the kind of the hope is that, you know, Clint Kubiak will, you know, add a little more flavor to his skill set, because Alvin Kamara is like a very skilled runner. He's a very skilled passer, not just catching, not just checkdowns, but like literally running routes out the backfield, lining up on in a slot, on the outside. He could do it all. So I think that's part of the hope. But yeah, man, it is a big question, man, when you look at it like that.
I will say it feels like the team also felt it too. So I don't know if I'd say this during our draft recap. The team really wanted to add a big receiver in round two. Like they really wanted to, and I don't, you know, Xavier Leggett, I'm forgetting who the Bills drafted, Keon Coleman.
Yeah, Keon Coleman.
Yeah, the run happened before they got on the clock, and then they kind of just went BPA and took Kool-Aid McKinstry. But it was an area that they really wanted to add that in the draft. I also, even though he's not big, I think they would have also liked to draft the Ladd McConkey, who went to the Chargers. So
yeah,
the way that you see it is how kind of the team saw it as well, and it just didn't play out with the way they wanted to in the draft.
Yeah. Is there any buzz with Means coming out of like OTAs?
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
Not much, he's one of those players. Yeah, I mean, his head is still spinning, but, you know, from everything I've heard, you know, he's physical. You know, him and Spencer Rattler had kind of a nice connection early in OTAs and minicamp. So, you know, it's one of those things where we just got to see how training camp plays out. It's going to be huge for him because I think he's going to get a lot of opportunity. And I think, you know, he has the skill set to succeed. But, you know, again, we're talking about rookies. You know, so you just never know.
Yeah.
We do have a question from a listener, our dude Dante. He said, with fans becoming smarter, do you, Scott, feel that the NFL is adapting fast enough to what fans want to know?
If you say it was Dante?
Yeah.
If he's here, I'd dig a little deeper, but I think the answer is no. Like I actually think there's a real opportunity on some of these broadcasts to do so much more than just like Jim Nantz talking at you. You know,
Completely agree.
Showing some of these advanced metrics. Like, I mean, I could even see like displaying some of the graphics, like stuff that we're putting together, like over as a hologram, like over the field. Like there's so much stuff you could do, which they just don't do up to this point. So no, the answer is no.
Is that a production thing? Is just that just kind of that the old school of if it's don't broke, don't fix it?
Adam, I'd be lying to you if I said I knew. I'm guessing it's more that and like a lot of old school people who are like, this is what works. We just put two dudes in the box and one person on the sideline and have them talk and call the game.
Right.
But
right.
I mean, Amazon, like the Thursday night games are probably the closest to them doing some creative things with the broadcast, but even still.
It's so funny because Dante said that in the chat that they're trying, but they need more across the league just in general.
Yeah.
No, I've heard it from like former players that went on to do color analysts and how they start off trying to give all this information and stuff, but they get told by the production heads and executives and like, hey man, dumb it down a little bit. You know, like people don't want to hear all that X and O stuff. Just, you know, and I'm just like, I do want to hear the X and O stuff. So I mean, maybe they're right. You know, maybe there is some data there that people just want to hear like real basic football stuff. But I just know what I see, man. I just know a ton of fans want like real high level stuff.
Yeah. It is an interesting question from like, so here at the Bushka household, right? Like I'm watching that game with my wife and my three kids and maybe there's another few people over, but right. If there's 10 people watching the game, there's probably only two or three of us who actually care.
Sickos.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me tell you, if you quit your corporate job to start a company based on football, you're a real sick.
You sick, bro. You real sick, bro. You sick.
Yeah. Yeah. So
me and Adam still got our day jobs. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we're recording at 9 p.m.
9 p.m., bro. You already know.
Hey. Almost midnight over here.
Yeah. Ryan's two hours ahead.
Shit, I was like, these guys must be West Coast. Sorry, I don't know if I was supposed to say that on the pod.
You could.
you have no idea.
I did, when you reached out, I went and watched some of your stuff and I was like, oh, these dudes are smoking cigars. Like, it's like, I can do this.
Yeah, it's just me. Completely, that's just right. I don't smoke. I got asthma, but I completely just be yourself. And, you know, this is, as someone who, like, you're like one of the scariest things, and I think you can speak to this even better than us, is just being out there free and being open and taking a chance on yourself, right? It's such a bet and a gamble. And like Ryan just said, like, we still have our, you know, I got lucky in life to find a career and working and driving, you know, trying to save kids' lives the best that I can. And that, like, I don't see myself doing anything other than that, like, as my, like, career. But that said, even us just, like, we're like, dude, we're doing well. Like, we should probably become a business and become official. But then when you start a business and become official, that means there's responsibilities and there's, like, income and taxes and all of it. And so what has that, you know, I know it's, you guys are in the very opening, you know, very early stages of Field Vision, but just hearing you talk and hearing what the actual vision is, it sounds so fascinating. How's that journey been for you?
Yeah, it's, first of all, I appreciate it, Adam and both of you guys. And I would say, like, it sounds like what you do for work is an amazing calling and, you know, has quite a bit more purpose than like me starting a football data company. I think I was telling my wife the other day, it's like, it's terrifying and exhilarating and fun and exhausting. And it's all of those things in the same day, every day. Yeah, I don't know. I think your term sicko is a good word, maybe.
Is your wife Sasha or is that your brother?
Sasha's my brother. But that's so funny because he's been mad his whole life because people think his name's a girl's name.
Well, he's watching our YouTube stream right now.
He is?
And he commented in the chat, "Fearless leader," referring to you. So,
what's up, Sasha?
Love it.
Yeah. One of my Sasha's gonna love this. But I was thinking about when you were asking, like, and maybe it's just because we were on the heels of such a riveting presidential debate the other night. But
sorry.
One of my There's a really good quote from an ex-president that talks about how Americans have, like, I think it's an endless capacity for risk and a gift for reinvention. And I just love that. I feel like this, our country in general was built on people like taking risk and reinventing themselves as they go through their career. And so that's like kind of how I think about what we're doing at Field Vision right now.
Yeah, man. I love it, man. I love this. Just trying to find niches out there, you know, trying to find, there's a demand for this stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like there is definitely a demand. I know me, I'm always looking, I don't play fantasy. I don't gamble, but I love just finding the data. And I'm not one of these people that just depend all on data, because I love the kind of the battle that happens between, you know, the tape watchers and the coaches and stuff like that, and the data people, the analytics people, and there's that kind of battle going on. I love that whole thing. Go ahead.
The never ending battle of is running the ball lead to like more effective play action is just going to be one.
My dude, Patrick Claiborne, we've been talking about, first of all, momentum.
Motivation?
But momentum, man. Momentum. Momentum exists.
Right. Momentum.
I was listening to a podcast recently that was trying to quantify clutch. Can you quantify clutch? Is there such thing as a clutch quarterback, or is that something we're kind of making up in our heads, you know?
No, there absolutely is.
Of course, and it's just fascinating. Exactly, but it's so fascinating trying to quantify that stuff with data, because, you know, sometimes the data shows it, sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes we're just not collecting the right data, you know? So I just think it's just so fascinating.
Yeah. It's funny too, because I think some of those things is just, you know, it when you see it. Like, I don't think there's any, you know, data to maybe quantify it. Like, I know that Patrick Mahomes is one of the most clutch quarterbacks ever played it, because we've seen it. Like, I don't need numbers to show that we've seen it. So it's all fascinating. It's late. I wanted to ask Scott one more question. What is like something since you started Field Vision in terms of the data mining or what have you that I don't know if I won't even use like a Eureka moment, but something that you and the team is just so proud of, just being able to kind of quantify with the data you guys have put together and come up with in terms of analyzing it.
Yeah, that is a great question. I think what I would say is sometimes it feels like there's two camps in football, right? There's like either the camp, which is like, data tells you everything and that's the answer, or the camp of like, we're old school football dudes and like we can watch it with our eyes and we know who's good and who's not. And the thing that I think has been fun for us as we've started to, and I'm sure Cody talked to you guys about, like, we're developing kind of these proprietary metrics around like havoc rate to rank defensive players, or like we're calling it threat rate to rank offensive players, is when you put together metrics like that, what you find out is that they reinforce most of what your eyes tell you, right? Like they're going to tell you last year it was like CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, right? Like these guys were the best receivers, but they also tell you things that you didn't see with your eyes, right? They also, for example, how good Amari Cooper was last year, which I think we all, like, in retrospect, you kind of knew that, but like he doesn't get talked about in that upper tier, right? But he had an amazing season. So I think it's like, it has been fun. And I actually fall more in the camp of like the football traditionalist, because I played and I'm like, yeah, like I can watch and know Mahomes is clutch. But I think that like what we've learned is that the data reinforces a lot of that, and it shines light on new things, which is actually where opportunity lies.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So what, I mean, what do you guys got coming? You talked about the app that's supposed to be coming soon. What do we got cooking for 2024 NFL season?
Well, we're launching the Field Vision app probably the Sunday before the NFL season starts. And actually, if you look at, so starting July 15th, we're going to be putting out, I mentioned our kind of like branded metrics, havoc rate, right, threat rate. So we'll start to put out rankings, like cornerback rankings, ooh, linebacker rankings, nice, team defense rankings, and we'll kind of roll that all the way into the season. But yeah, Apple launch before before the first game. There'll be a free trial. There's lots of free content that people can get without paying for anything. So look out for it. I think people enjoy it.
Oh yeah,
hell yeah.
Without question. I said I had one. My last one. I lied. One last one. This is my official last one. Anything that surprised you about the data? It could be about a player. It could be about a team. It could be about maybe something that you, when you were watching a team or watching a player, you thought you saw it a certain way, or saw a player or a team a certain way, and the data said maybe the opposite.
I feel like you might have stumped me.
Derek Carr's ranking on deep passes, maybe.
Derek Carr being the number one rated passer on the deep left part of the field.
Right. I mentioned that because,
which is funny, because he's always been like a good deep, like that's one like attribute of his, has always been.
But the thing is, I hear, like when I listen to other podcasts, they talk about Derek Carr as a check down artist, which he is. But I just think I wouldn't say underrated, but like last year, it was almost frustrating at times because
it was.
Bro, throw that 8-yard pass down the middle. Like, why are you,
yeah,
like, you know, like you don't need to throw it dumb it downfield. Like, that's a low percentage throw. Like, it was frustrating sometimes last year. Like, bro, like take the 9-yard out route. You know what I'm saying? Like, bro, it's right there. So it was just funny to just seeing your data show that, you know?
We have a watch party on Zoom that gets live streamed during game day to all our Patreon. So it's, you know, sometimes it's 15, 20, 25 of us deep watching the Saints game all together in the same time. And to Ryan's point, there were so many plays last season where we were just like, bro, like, why are you throwing the ball so deep right now? Just like, it's right there. Like, the player is right underneath. He's open. And it was just like, chuck, chuck. So. Yeah. Yeah, that probably is one.
I mean, this is probably, like, as Saints fan, this is probably cutting you guys too deep. But the thing that drives me insane about Derek Carr is his, like, ridiculous body language and, like, facial expressions.
Going back to leadership, we talked about it with Aaron Rodgers. We had a whole spiel. Was it Monday Night Football with the Jags, when he's like becoming like irate at Chris Olave, and Chris Olave didn't run the wrong route, but he didn't run the wrong route. It was the right route.
Yeah. He's also just like taking, like dropping back two steps and just like throwing it up over, like, you know, like on the left side of the field.
Oh my God.
That's our quarterback.
That's our quarterback, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, could be Spencer Rattler by game 7.
Hey,
Spencer Rattler, Jay Kaner, like something. Just add a little spice to the football season.
You're a Chiefs fan. Look, before 2017, you knew what it was like being in quarterback purgatory or looking for that quarterback.
Those Alex Smith's teams were
not purgatory, man. It's purgatory. You know, he was like, cool. Wow. Like,
Alex Smith's purgatory and like Derek Carr purgatory feels like two different types of purgatory, though.
It's true. But before Alex Smith, there was Matt Cassel and Elvis Gerbach and Trent Green and Dave Craig and Joe Montana when he was like 50. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You good now? Those Trent Green Chiefs teams are pretty goddamn good, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But they managed to lose in the first round of the playoffs every time.
Scott, man, as people, like, we're all three of us doing this podcast late at night, it just goes to show, like, we we love what we do, and we're passionate about what we do. So thank you for coming on so late. I know you had to pick a time where the kiddos were asleep and all that, but very excited for Field Vision. Am I definitely something that we're going to heavily promote as the football season comes around, because it seems like it's right up our alley. Got our listeners downloading it, and you know, just wishing you guys all the best. It sounds like the niche that you guys are wanting to reach out to is just perfect, and it just seems like it's just something so different in a very heavy data driven you know, sports football market. So thanks for coming on, man, and just chopping it up with us and telling us about Field Vision, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, hey, listen, man, you dudes are awesome. Thank you so much for having me on, and thanks for what you guys do. And hey, I'm happy to come back on anytime, so just let me know, man.
But we'll like midpoint in the season, we're gonna have like a Field Vision, like maybe like December, November, or whatever. We'll have a Field Vision kind of follow up with how you guys are doing and seeing how the Saints are doing early in the season. Let's go.
I'd love to. You can check our math.
No, that would be my girlfriend, Jay. If you read my draft article, that was all the numbers all come from her. That's all her. But
all right. All right, good. Well, tell her to subscribe.
She is an epidemiologist, so she would be more along the lines of like, can I do this as my side gig kind of thing? Like that's the type of stats that she does. But appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for coming on, right. And we can't thank you enough, man.
Yeah, awesome, dudes. Talk to you later.
All right, man. Have a good one. So that was our amazing, just fun conversation with Scott. Please follow Field Vision at Field Vision MI on Twitter, X, and then on Instagram. It is Field Vision Sports. Thank y'all for joining us late. Well, I don't know what time it is, but you know, good ass episode. Like, you can't ask for more, man. Can't ask for more.
Real, man. That was awesome. Can't wait to see what they got coming out, bro. Like, that's gonna be some good shit.
So we will be back sometime, probably not before this week. So enjoy the timeout. Real quick. We're wrapping this up. So the Saints announced some practices are going to be open in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. One at the Superdome. Where's the other one at?
Tulane Stadium.
There you go. Oddly enough, there has been no announcement made regarding any of the practices in Irvine.
Nope.
Getting to the point where it's looking like they're not going to open a single practice while they're in Irvine for almost an entire month, including joint practices against the 49ers from the 15th to the 16th.
Nope.
Just can't think of a bigger way to slap a fan base in the face, bro.
And they're going
to
give us two nice practices when they come home after August 20th. It's like, what are y'all doing, man? Saints, what are y'all doing? What are we doing?
It doesn't make sense, man. Like, I could guarantee you with all the people, just Patreons who are out here, we could have been at least 15, 20 deep, bro. At least 15, 20 deep. And now, nothing. More than likely, nothing. It's bad business, bro. It's bad business.
You got a team where you got a fan base that's becoming apathetic.
Someone got in my mentions and said, and when I was on my tangent on it on Twitter and was like, damn, they really doing the fans like that? I was ready to fly out to Irvine.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you talking about Saints fans here. Talking about Saints fans, bro. Come on now. All right. Saints say, here, damn. Take these two practices.
All right. I'm just saying, like, coming off the two seasons that they've had, you have a head coach who's 24 and 46. You have Derek Carr as quarterback who played at best an average NFL quarterback at best, even just going by Field Vision's standards. And, you know, it matches exactly what we saw, although he played way worse than average at times. it just feels like like no one in the front office gets it. No one gets it.
We couldn't give away tickets last year. Couldn't give them away. Begging people, please take the tickets.
We stopped even putting qualifiers on it, Ryan. You didn't have to answer a question.
You got to be nothing.
Just take this shit off me.
Nobody wanted it, bro. Like, come on. And y'all can't help the fans that do want to see y'all asses. Y'all can't open up a couple practices. Like, thumbs down. It's trash. Trash.
Dante said, how many ways can they show they hate us? From the Loomis pressure to the tongue-in-cheek schedule release to this. I don't... They it's like what Ryan said, man. When no one is worried about their job, right?
Yeah.
This is what you get. When everyone's like all made, like the only person that may be worried about their job right now is Dennis Allen. But the true people, Mickey Loomis, Dennis Lucia, they good.
Chillin'.
Like what impetus do they feel like they have to change? I could get a whole tangent regarding my job, but when you have people who are not even enabled, but they keep getting the message that whatever they do, there's no repercussions or no consequences to it. This is what you get, bro. Like no one's gonna, and I feel like I'm the only person. You too, but like we're the only people who are really even bringing this up as an issue. Like
everybody else, like it's
like you know, no offense to like Saints media, but like it's weird, bro. Even going back to when me and our dude Julio went to the training camp practice last season with the Chargers and the Saints, and I get it, the Chargers are out here, but the Chargers opened the practice up, and they're the thing that. Is more frustrating about this whole thing is that there are no barriers that would keep the Saints from having fans at the practice. The Chargers and Rams are okay with it. The NFL is okay with it. We know that the facility that they're going to be at can fit fans, and it's accommodated for fit fans because the Rams were out there last year. So the only thing that is stopping them is either want to or they don't want to sell out the money to do it. So, maybe both.
I don't know. Either way, it's bad business.
Broke bitches. Anyway, had to get off my chest, man. But it's maddening, man. But anyhow, we appreciate y'all. Thank y'all for joining us so late. It was a great episode. If we're not back before this week, we probably won't be. Hope everyone have a 4th of July, even though this country is.
Thank you. Ooh, big shit.
Like someone thought they was going fart and they just messed up their draws, bro. That's the U.S. right now, bro.
U.S.
the Olympics, though. The Olympics is coming back, bro.
USA. It's the height of our patriotism.
What's wrong with us, Ryan?
I don't know, man.
No, either. Anyway, have a good 4th of July. Try to enjoy.
Enjoy yourself, man.
Please be safe. Enjoy. You know, make as always, man. Make memories with the people that you love. That is a testament and a model of our podcast, man. So just make memories with the people that you love. Be safe. Have fun. But anyway, we'll be back next week. With that, we're out.
Peace.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel.
Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.